Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CracksSidewalks.com.
Alrighty. Marquette Basketball Podcast here on CracksSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush, finally back with you. I guess we were on a bit of a hiatus, Phil. It wasn't a COVID hiatus. It was more of a... we got a lot of crap going on, and I just don't have an hour to talk about Marquette's defense hiatus.
Well, it was, I guess we would call it the apathy hiatus. We just didn't, we had other stuff going on, and we just didn't have the energy to talk about what's going on with Marquette.
Yeah, so sorry about the wait. I'm sure you guys were able to manage one way or the other. But we are back to talk about Marquette basketball once again, where the team is, can it make the tournament? Is it okay to be excited about this team, or should we, you know, just continue to eat Arby's? That's what we're going to go through on today's show. Phil, so let's just talk about the most recent game. Marquette did get a win on Saturday morning over St. John's. The schedule has been doing a bit of shuffling, but this is a part of the schedule where Marquette can maybe start to make up some ground and maybe start to pile up a few wins in the Big East. And that St. John's game was one you really needed to have, because St. John's looking like it's probably going to finish near the bottom of the Big East, maybe not the very bottom, but that's a team you should beat. It was a struggle at times, but they were able to get it done, so I guess I'll take a road win wherever I can take it.
Yeah, I think the St. John's game was kind of like the conference season in a nutshell for Marquette this year, right? Like, there were times when they looked really solid, right? They were defending fairly well, except for open three-point shots, which just seems to continue to be the bane of this team's existence. But they were defending fairly well, and the offense was clicking. They jumped out to a, you know, not a substantial lead, but a significant lead. A 11-point differential on the road in college basketball is significant. So in that regard, you know, it's pretty typical for what's been going on. And then Marquette, largely in the second half, kind of fell apart. Unlike in the Connecticut game, they managed to put Humpty Dumpty back together again and eke out a win. So it was Marquette basketball all in one game, and you know, this is kind of who they are now, right? Like, I don't see any reason to suspect that suddenly Marquette is going to play an outstanding 40 minutes of basketball all at one time. I would expect 15, 20 minutes of good basketball, 5 to 10 minutes of bad basketball, and then 5 minutes of, boy, I don't know, but I hope it's one of the good ones. But, you know?
Yeah, it's that five-minute wild card that determines whether they win or lose.
Right, exactly.
So, like, whether they, you know, yeah, you're going to have some great moments, and you're going to have some, holy crap, this is embarrassing moments. And then it's just those last few minutes could tilt it one way or the other. And I agree. I think we kind of have a feeling of what Marquette is, and I think this particular team is a bubble team. And how they do against the middle tier of the Big East is going to determine whether they're on the good side of the bubble or on the bad side of the bubble when it comes time to make these brackets. That's really what this stretch from basically beginning with the Georgetown game all the way up until the next Creighton game on February 6th. This stretch is a time to pile up some wins, some quality wins. They're not like the highest quality, but most of them are going to be top 100 KenPom wins if you can get them. And yeah, like, I don't think Marquette is going to be a great team this year. They're not going to be an elite team. I don't think they're going to be a team that anyone is going to be picking to do significant damage in March. But I think they are maybe a tick above average as far as compared to, say, a typical power conference team. That, you know, that would put them right in the bubble mix. A team that can make the tournament, but probably I don't know if they could do much more than that. And yeah, you know, if you focus on the positives, the young players tend to be the biggest positives. You know, I think Dawson Garcia continues to emerge. I think he's showing more confidence, being a little more aggressive in the paint, making good decisions. He's shooting the ball well. And DJ Carton, we talked about on this pod in the past, has shown more confidence and really started to thrive once he moved into the starting lineup. He's had his games where he didn't shoot the ball well, so he's maybe not the most consistent, but he's had his games where he's been really strong. He was really good in the St. John's game. I mean, he had two really nice dunks in that game that really kind of energized the team, even though the lead went away immediately after that second dunk. But yeah, I mean, and Justin Lewis has been a positive pretty much all year. But there are the negatives, though, that I think maybe sometimes we focus on the negatives more than we need to, but we don't necessarily need to ignore them either. And like, for example, in the St. John's game, where that press had Marquette just absolutely flustered for really the entire game, and I'm not sure how they survived with it. Given how much trouble they were having with it.
Well, it was shocking to me that Kobe McEwen was the only player that seemed consistently able to or felt consistently comfortable in bringing the ball up against the press. I don't know that, you know, St. John's at times was bringing doubles and really pressing hard, but especially in the second half, they seemed to back off a little bit. And offer token pressure, so I think that helped Marquette a little bit. But yeah, I think it's a balance, right? I know, you know, there's lots of negative things going on in the world that perhaps colors some of the view we have on things and can be overly negative. That's the question to answer in this podcast is, you know, there are certainly negative things going on with the team. There are certainly positive things going on with the team. Like, which do we put more weight into, right? Like, there is no doubting that the last three games, and quite frankly, even the Georgetown game, Connecticut, Providence, St. John's, all of those games featured significant double-digit leads for one of the teams, either the opponent or for Marquette. And that lead evaporating and resulting in a tight game, which then three out of the four Marquette ended up winning. The Connecticut game, obviously, Marquette gave up an 18-point lead in the second half to lose by 11, which is kind of startling. Like, so, you know, the team is who they are. Are we putting, I guess the question to you after all this rambling is, are we putting too much pressure on ourselves as fan and on the team? Or are we blowing kind of this lead differential thing out of proportion in like evaluating the team, right? They've won three out of four. At times it was ugly. Yes, they gave up double-digit leads and hang on by their fingernails. But, like, are we making too much of that?
Yeah, you know, I've wondered that in the past because – it seems like most national writers, whether it's Seth Davis or Gary Parrish or whoever you like to follow nationally, they seem to be mostly complimentary of Marquette and mostly on board saying, hey, they're a good team. They've had some good wins. They just have some tough losses, but I think they're a good team and they're going to make the tournament. Like Seth Davis, despite losses, you know, has had him in his almost famous in his personal top 25 every week. And it seems like they're more complimentary, whereas maybe this just speaks to the type of Marquette fans I associate with, right, the type I follow, tend to focus on the negatives and say, man, this team is nowhere close. Why should they be ranked? You know, most college basketball fans clamor for more respect. Why don't you talk about our team more? Where it seems like a lot of the Marquette fans I know saying, please don't talk about our team. We're not there yet. And I do wonder if sometimes that this team with some fans is paying for past teams' failures, and like the fact, you know, the fact that we are in year 7 of Wojo, not a whole lot significant has happened in the program as far as postseason success. Granted, there was no opportunity for postseason success last year, and the anxiousness of waiting for something big to happen with the program is taken out on this team unfairly. Because this is a bit of a reset in some regards, as the Marquette is depending on some young players. I don't want to say it's a young team because there are seniors that this team is depending on to have major roles, so I think young team is misleading, but they are depending on some young players to have major roles. So I think this team in a vacuum is actually doing okay. I mean, if we go back to what we set as our expectations for this team, whether it's you or me or the preseason polls or whoever, I think most people had this team pegged right around here, didn't they?
Yeah.
As a 500-ish team that is going to be right around the bubble. So I'd say they are right now meeting those expectations. If you look in strictly wins and losses, they are a top 50-ish KenPom team. Either 53 as we're recording this, so they're around 50, which is, you know, knocking on the door in the neighborhood of trying to get into the tournament. They're, you know, the kind of middle tier as far as power conference teams. So this team, like I said, in a vacuum, I think this team is doing okay with what it has. Obviously, we would love more wins, but sometimes I do think this team is paying for some past team's failures. It's like where I think some of us are bracing for the late season collapse that we've seen the last two seasons with Wojo's teams. And maybe that's coming, maybe it's not, but I think the fact that we've seen it the last 2 years, some people are bracing for it, and it may never come.
Yeah, I think the thing that's feeding into this, because I think you're right. I think there is a Wojo tax, if you will, in terms of expectations and evaluating the performance of this team, given the lack of significant delivery in the past. I think two things are going on there. One, I think people struggle, and because at least I'm saying other people, because I know I do, right? Like watching the games, and it's easy to throw darts from the comfort of my living room as I'm watching a game with no practical experience whatsoever. But I think the things that are happening in the games are seemingly utterly predictable, right? Like when you're on Twitter or on social media commenting on, well, here comes a bad after a timeout play, or hey, look, Wojo's going to sit Dawson Garcia, who's 5 for 5. He's going to sit him for 5 minutes. That's going to work out well, right? Or you know, there was a couple of comments about the St. John's game, like, oh, we're going to have a slow start to the second half, and that 11-point lead's going to evaporate. And sure enough, it happens, right? So the utter predictability of the performance, I think, feeds into this concept that, like, and I think if you stepped back, the prediction isn't as clear, right? There's different things at work each time that are resulting, but I think from an appearance standpoint, the predictability of the lapses seems to feed the narrative that, like, we just don't know what we're doing, or things are so simple, right?
Yeah, we're always waiting for the sky to fall, and often it does. It's right. Just a matter of whether at the end of the day, Marquette has more points than its opponent. I definitely get what you're saying. Is even when the team gets up 15, 20 points, no one anymore is like singing the praises, like, wow, what a great showing. They are doing so great. This is an amazing showing. Congratulations to this team. It's more, all right, so how badly are they going to blow this lead?
Right.
And inevitably they do.
Right.
To some point, that 20-point lead gets down to 5 or 6, you know, and it's just a matter of whether they're going to hang on at the end. So and is that on the players? Is that on Wojo? Is that something more than that? Maybe a little bit of everything. But
well, it'd be good to know, yeah, like, how often, like, and I have zero interest in doing this data deep dive, but I'd love to know, like, in Power 6 conferences, like, how often one team is up, let's say 12 points plus in a game, and then that lead evaporates and the end of the game is within, we'll say, what, 3 points? You know, the margin of victory is 3 points or less. Like, I'd love to know what that looks like. Like, is Marquette's inability to hold a significant lead, is that abnormal, above average?
Yeah, like,
you know?
Yeah, like, what's the percentile on that, right? Is it extremely rare, or is it typical, and it's just the old expression, it's a game of runs. Sometimes it's a game of runs, and you just got to hope you're on the end of more positive runs than negative runs. But we've seen that team over and over with this team over and over again. I expect it to continue, because I think Marquette does have plenty of guys who can be streaky, right? We've had, you know, whether it's Kobe or whether it's Dawson or whether it's Jamal Cain or Greg Elliott, you know, all these, or Theo John, whoever, all these guys maybe have stretches where maybe it seems like they can't miss and they're having a great game, and then also have stretches where you're not even sure if they're on the floor.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that begs the question, right? Like, who would you, at this point in the season, peg as Marquette's most consistent performer?
Offensively or all around?
Let's start offensively, but I do want to have the all-around discussion as well.
Yeah, I think offensively it's Dawson.
Yeah.
I think you know he does. It seems like when the team needs a bucket, he's still got that 3-point shot. He's shooting 40% from three on the year, but he is getting more confident and more aggressive going to the hole, whether it's taking a man off a dribble or as a post up. I think he's shown improvement in that regard. And so I think when this team does need a bucket, I am most confident that Dawson Garcia is the guy who can get it. And he is the team's leading scorer right now, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the lead. That's one thing about KenPom; it never has points per game. it has literally everything, but like points per game is not there. But he is one of the team's best offensive players, and I'd say offensively it's him. All around. I have to say there's one area where Dawson maybe isn't one of the best is defensively. Again, maybe improving a bit in that regard. But I would say the guys who maybe are the most consistent maybe don't get the most minutes, because I think like when a guy like Justin Lewis gets on the floor, you kind of know exactly what you're getting from him. And I would say the same for Greg Elliott too. Like Greg Elliott doesn't get the most minutes. Far from it. He's only getting like 40% of the minutes right now. But I would say he might be the guy who, when he's on the floor, I am most confident that I know what I'm getting from him.
Yeah, I would say from a like an offensive standpoint, I agree with you on Dawson Garcia. Like, I think he may, you know, if we're talking floor and ceiling metaphors, like he's the one that's got the most consistent ceiling, I think, offensively. I think DJ Carton and even Justin Lewis can have potentially higher offensive ceilings at times. I mean, look at some of the stuff DJ Carton did in that St. John's game. That one drive from the wing where he put his defender like on absolute skates and got to the bucket for a layup, even with the secondary defender coming over to block. Like that is just stuff that goes, boy, if we could get that 90% of the time, like DJ Carton would be a first round pick, no doubt. But I think
Dawson. By the way, is the leading scorer, barely 13.4. Kobe's right behind him at 12.6. But right. Go ahead.
And so I think Kobe probably suffers the most from the offensively. Has I think the most swings, you know, from game to game. Right, like he'll have a 26, 27 point game, and then he'll have like a 6-point game. So I think Kobe's the most inconsistent. Dawson's probably the most consistent and our best offensive threat. As far as like consistent all round, I do think, and it's hard to say because while I agree that I think Justin Lewis and Greg Elliott, like they need to play more, and I think they give us like kind of their best all the time. It's hard for me to say simply, especially with Greg, because they are getting so few minutes, and that's kind of flabbergasting to me. I don't know why we're making some of the lineup choices we're making. But I actually think Theo John is probably the most consistent player on both ends of the floor in terms of, like, yes, he's not going to light up the scoreboard on the offensive end, but if you need a bucket, if within the flow of the offense, he'll get you a bucket if he's in the right position and has the right opportunity. He's been able to pass out of doubles. Defensively, he brings an element. He's been able to guard on the perimeter much better than I thought. So I think Theo John's probably the most consistent. He's not the best player, but I think he's the most consistent from an all-around standpoint in my mind. Though I did not going to Theo John in a must-score possession at the end of the St. John's game. That I did not feel comfortable there at all.
He's never a guy you expect much from offensively, even though he has improved quite a bit in that regard. But I think it's a fair point because he is a great defensive player, and he's an intimidating defensive presence. You're always going to get that from him. By the way, shouts to him. He's now number two all time in Marquette block shots, and that's where he's going to stay. Because yes, if he doubled his career block totals somehow in the next 10 games, you know, whatever, however many games Marquette has left, he still would not catch Jim McElvain. So
he's at two, and he will stay. Yeah, we should probably talk about Jim McElvain's career a lot more than people.
Yeah, we really should. I mean, yeah, that. But yeah, Jim McElvain's career blocks record would, I dare say, it will never be broken at Marquette. It would take a Absolutely. Anybody who is good enough to get that many blocks in their career probably would not stay 4 years. So I would say his record is safe. But
Well, and the game's changed, right? Like, it's much less of an interior. There's certainly some interior game involved. Like, Theo John, like, obviously is an excellent shot blocker, but, you know, he's also not playing out on the perimeter blocking shots. And it's just a different game than when McIlvaine played.
Yeah, very true, very true. But we digress. He's very. You know what you're going to get from Theo pretty much every game. And really, honestly, the only time you don't get what you expect out of Theo is probably because he's in foul trouble.
Right.
That's one thing that really throws him off. Other than that, he's going to be very strong defensively, and he'll probably get you a few buckets on the offensive end every game. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, you talked about the rotations and, you know, the guys were playing. What would you change? Like, how would you shake it up if you were given an opportunity to change who Marquette is playing and how much?
Yeah, I think if I was given the opportunity, right, to influence, quite honestly, I think I would go to as close to a seven-man rotation as I could. You know, especially as games are dropping out, right? Like, Marquette didn't play the second Villanova game. They had another game canceled, the Georgetown game.
Georgetown was supposed to be this week, and that is not going to be played. They say postponed, not to get too off topic here, but we might get to this after we talk about the lineups, but they say postponed, but I don't think it's going to be made up. But let's get back to the lineups and we can talk schedule.
So I think there's gap, you know, I know the tired legs and stuff. I think our top seven players are very good, you know, top seven, and I'm confused as to the number and amount of minutes that Samir Torrence and even Dexter Akano are getting in the run of play, right? Like, I don't think we really have to be that concerned about players getting tired out. Certainly foul trouble can be a factor from time to time. But I think our top seven players are Greg Elliott, Theo John, Jamal Cain, Justin Lewis, DJ Carton, Dawson Garcia, and Kobe McEwen. Play those seven guys 97% of the minutes. I just got done saying Theo John's probably our most consistent player, but I think we also got to find ways to maximize Dawson and Justin. Like, the fact that Justin Lewis has been typically playing less than 30 minutes a game, in some instances as few as, you know, in the Villanova game, he only played 16 minutes. He only played 22 minutes in the St. John's game. Like, that, you know, he only played 21 minutes against UConn. That is problematic to me, right? Like, even if you have to play Dawson and Justin together, the way those two guys pass and move and create space, they can play together for sure. And that'll preserve some time for Theo John. I know Theo's got some knee issues and you know, sometimes gets into foul trouble. He should not be playing, you know, 30 minutes or more a game. Not because he can't do it, but just, you know, that doesn't optimize his performance. So that's the big change I would do, is I would flip the minutes played in with the big men and maximize Dawson and Justin. And I would try and get as much Greg Elliott as possible, right? Like, even if you have to go Kobe, Greg, Jamal, you know, and then whatever two big men you use or what, you know, play Greg at the two, play Greg at the three, whatever. Just get him more minutes, especially with his shooting ability. I feel like he's the most consistent three-point shooter on the team. Now, it's not as many shots as some of the others, but he's shooting 50% from three. That's got to mean something, right?
I mean, that pales only comparison to Theo John's 75%.
That's true. Maybe I'm wrong about Theo John. We need to maximize him out on the perimeter.
Theo John, 3 of 4 from three on the season. But no, you're right. I am in favor of more minutes for Greg somehow, but I understand why that's difficult. Because, you know, DJ's your point guard, and you don't want – I mean, and Kobe is probably your second best scorer. On many nights, he is your best scorer. And so it's tough to get minutes for Greg, but he does have the best offensive rating on the team.
Right.
As we're recording this. And so I think when Greg gets in the game, he tends to do pretty well. But I'm kind of with you, and this probably isn't all that different from what Wojo is doing, but I do agree. This maybe try to find ways to get just a little more minutes for Lewis and a little more minutes for Elliott, because they tend to be pretty strong when they're in there. Yeah, maybe that does mean a fewer minutes for Theo, or fewer just taking a few minutes away from Kobe, or a few minutes away from DJ or Jamal. But it's when you have players in there who are playing at such a high level, you kind of want them on the floor. Guys who are playing well, you want them on the floor. Sometimes the game is simple in that regard. But yeah, I kind of agree that it's a 7-man rotation. Basically, you're looking at it as three guys for two front court spots. Right, with right. Lewis, Garcia, John, and then you got four guys for three perimeter spots.
Right,
with McEwen, Carton, Kane, Greg, and then it's essentially spot minutes due to either fouls or injury for Saimir or Dex. And, you know, Dex has struggled the minutes he's gotten, but he really hasn't played that much. So I if you want to give him a 2 minutes here or there just to keep him interested, I guess you can do that, but Dex hasn't. Yeah, like I said, he's not quite there yet as far as being a Big East player. And then you know, Oso and Perez haven't really gotten any minutes in a while. So, but yeah, I think it is kind of a 7-man rotation, and the other guys on the bench are just there, you know, break glass in case of emergency. So, I guess what I have described, like I said, it's probably really not that much different from what Ojo has been doing. Just if there are ways to get a little more for Lewis or a little more for Greg, you know, make sure you find ways to do that. You know, this is just kind of anecdotal. Like, I don't necessarily have the stats to back this up, but I do feel like sometimes when a guy goes to the bench with three fouls in the second half, sometimes you forget about him.
Yep.
and he stays over there.
Definitely seems to.
Yeah, like, I don't necessarily have stats to back that up, but sometimes there have been a few games this year where I'm thinking, man, Dawson's been on the bench for a long time, or Justin's been on the bench for a long time. There was one game where it seemed like Kobe was on the bench for a really long time.
Yeah.
You know, don't forget about the guys that are sitting is all I'm saying.
Well, which was odd given the game against St. John's, right? Jamal Cain played, you know, at least 8-9 minutes in the second half with three fouls. When, again, you could have brought Greg in, let Jamal, you know, rest and kind of save it. Now, it worked out, right? So this is where we're potentially, you know, harkens back to the are we being too negative, right? Marquette won that game. So questioning the lineup, perhaps it's ill-suited for what's going on. But, you know, I think it's very clear that the primary ball handlers for Marquette are DJ Carton and Kobe McEwen. Right. Stamir yeah. Torrence is supposed to be a ball handler. I've been less than impressed at times, you know, especially like in that St. John's game.
His turnover rate is the highest among the team, among guys who are getting significant minutes. Technically, Dexter Econo's is higher, but he barely plays. But he has a turnover rate of 29%.
Right. Which is bad. Like that was like Marcus Howard his sophomore year bad. And Samir Torrence is not any of the other things of Marcus Howard in his sophomore year, right? So this is where I struggle because Wojo seems to be maximizing DJ and Kobe together, which if they're your two primary ball handlers, you got to play them together less so that they can sub for each other when, you know, in the offense, right? Like there definitely should never be times when both DJ and Kobe are on the bench, unless it's significant foul issues or injury related, right? Like maybe you can steal 1 minute or something like that where both DJ and Kobe are out, but the offense just does not work if DJ or Kobe are not in the game to kind of stir the drink. Not that they're like assist machines or score, but they are our most consistent perimeter slashers. And that creates for the rest of the team. This offense yep. Wojo's running seems to be predicated on, you know, drive and kick for the most part. You know, a lot of perimeter Tom Crean weave and then drive and kick. And Kobe and DJ are the only two players that can do that consistently on this roster.
No, that's a valid point. And one of those guys does have to be on the floor because, like you said, if the not like either one is going to get a ton of assists, but just that the defense has to account for them. And if when they're having the ball, the defense maybe is bringing double teams to try to throw them off the rhythm, and then that creates an opportunity for Dawson, or creates an opportunity to get the ball into Theo, or swing the ball around the perimeter and find Kane open for a corner three. So, but yeah, like the only time I would say both guys should be on the bench is maybe if you're trying to get them both like just a quick blow before a media timeout or before halftime or whatever. Or not before halftime, but yeah, like before a media timeout, just to get them a little longer extended rest. But yeah, I would agree with your take there. So
yeah, and that gives you, and again, if you're spreading DJ and Kobe, that gives you room to move Greg Elliott into the lineup more, right? Like Greg seems to be getting the Jamal Kane treatment of the last couple of years, right? Like he gets some minutes, but if he makes a mistake or if there are any issues, he doesn't get a sustained run, right? Like he plays at most 2 or 3 minutes at a time, and you know, and I just don't think he's getting enough consistent minutes. You can tweak the DJ Kobe positioning if you use Greg more, and that's where I get confused as to why Justin Lewis and Greg Elliott, who are two very good players on the bench, why they're not getting 4 to 5 more minutes each a game, right? That I think that's a tweak you can make relatively easy, and kind of pays off in the long run.
Yeah, and in the grand scheme, that sounds like a very small adjustment. It sounds like we're kind of nitpicking there, and maybe we are, but it does. But who knows? Maybe just maybe 5 more minutes for Greg here or there does make a difference in maybe just the continuity of the game, and Greg gets you a few more quality minutes that maybe you otherwise wouldn't get. So I'm with you. Maybe those guys, but maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. We'll find out this week. So Marquette did have a game with Georgetown scheduled this week. That is off due to COVID concerns within Georgetown's program. Georgetown is on pause. So the next game is going to be Saturday against DePaul. Hooray. DePaul, who's only played 6 games to date. DePaul has just had terrible luck with COVID, whether it's within their own program or games they had schedules kept getting postponed, or they flew to New York, were at the arena to play St. John's, game was canceled, got right back on the plane, flew back to Chicago. So, like, DePaul has had a hell of a time this year with COVID. So with that in mind, I'm not even 100% sure that game gets played this week. Maybe it does. But another game you got to win, Phil, right? If you want to make up some ground in the Big East, DePaul at home is really a game you got to win without excuses.
Yeah, well, I think to be honest, to your point, like if we want to be on the right side of the bubble, the next 3 games, you know, starting with DePaul, are the games Marquette has to win. I mean, right now, let's be honest about where Marquette is. They're on the wrong side of the bubble. They're out, right? If you look at bracket matrix, they're out of 63 brackets. There are 2 that have Marquette in the tournament as of yesterday. And those 2 brackets, one had us as an 11 seed and the other had us as a 12 seed. So essentially, one of the last 4 teams in. So Marquette's going to have to win all of the games, you know, at Marquette. I would say this, for Marquette to have a shot at making the tournament, Marquette has to win every game that is against a KenPom 50 or higher opponent, right? So like DePaul is 89, Providence 63, Butler 91. You have to win those 3 games, right? Now you can make the argument, well, if they turn around and beat Creighton again, who's a KenPom 12, that makes up for one of those others, I suppose, but we're still talking volume, right? The team is 8-6, 4-4 in conference and on the wrong side of the bubble. So you got to win these games that you're supposed to win if you want to have any shot at the NCAA tournament bid. And you got to factor in, you got to win the games when you've got them, because games can disappear off the schedule, right? I mean, they're like Seton Hall, Creighton, and let's say Connecticut are the top 3 teams left on Marquette's schedule. All 3 of those games could disappear if there's COVID concerns, either from Marquette's side or from those opponents. So you've got to rack up wins every time out just to get enough wins to be in consideration.
Yeah, so that's the pros and cons of, you know, not being able to play those games against Villanova and Georgetown. I mean, the say, well, maybe you're not losing to Villanova, but the other side of that is that's a missed opportunity to get a great win and really move yourself up in the S curve. And the Georgetown game, yeah, that's the game you're supposed to win. And you know, you're looking at it and say, well, we'll get that one. That's no problem. But if it's off the schedule, now that's you're losing an opportunity to kind of pad your resume with a respectable win. It's not a great win beating Georgetown, but it's better than nothing. And so, yeah, you look down the schedule, say, oh, well, we're going to play St. John's again. We'll beat them. We got DePaul twice. We're going to beat them twice. We get a game against Butler. We'll definitely beat them. Well, that game might not get played.
Right.
So you may – like I was saying earlier, they keep saying postponed when these games don't happen, postponed, which suggests that they're going to be made up at some point. I don't think they're going to be made up unless there is just some kind of perfect storm where, say, Marquette and DePaul both have a game canceled in a week and their canceled games are on the same day. Then maybe one team drives and goes plays the other because they're so close in proximity. Other than that, some people have been pushing this week since Connecticut's game with Xavier is likely going to be off because Xavier's got a COVID issue, that Marquette and Connecticut should try to play this week and just open up a date later on. But the kind of pushback we've been getting, Mike Broeker has been tweeting, there's really no rush to do things like that and create maybe a disadvantage for a team. Like, say Connecticut's missing
Book night.
James, they're missing book night, and they're probably not in a rush to do it. And really, the only goal is to get 13 games, not Big East games, but just 13 games total to be eligible to play in the postseason. So Marquette has that. They've played 13 games. But there doesn't appear that the Big East is in any rush or really stressing at all to play 20 games. They're just trying to get enough games in that all their teams are eligible for postseason play. So, and I don't think there's going to be any time at the end of the season to make up these games. So right now it's scheduled for 18. Maybe you assume you lose another game here or there. Maybe at the end of the day, Marquette plays 15 Big East games, something like that. So I don't expect that Villanova game or that Georgetown game to be made up. And so, like you were saying, Phil, just take the opportunities when you can. So when you got a chance to beat a top 100 KenPom team like Marquette has this week with DePaul, you better get it, because the wins you are counting on later on to maybe make up for it if you lose, you might not get those opportunities.
Right, exactly. Well, and a couple of points here. I mean, if you think about it, right, the Big East, at the end of the day, the Big East wants to put 5 or 6 teams in the NCAA tournament. It almost doesn't care what teams those are, right? Because when it comes down to it, the more teams you put into the NCAA tournament, the more tournament shares you get for making the tournament, one, which is money that then gets split amongst the conference, and two, that gives you more opportunities for those teams to go deeper in the tournament. And I can't say that, you know, I have zero sources that say this is the line of thinking, but it makes all the sense in the world to me. The Big East is invested in getting its best teams into the NCAA tournament. So let's say a Villanova, right? If Villanova is comfortably in the tournament with, and has more than 13 games played, and is comfortably, let's say, a 3 seed, why is the Big East going to risk hurting Villanova's seeding by making up a game with Marquette that maybe Marquette wins? Not saying they would, but there's a possibility Marquette could win that game, which hurts Villanova's seeding. Or, you know, take another team. Maybe Xavier's on the bubble, right? And a Xavier-Marquette game gets canceled. Or let's take Marquette out. It's a Xavier-Georgetown game has been canceled. Why would they make up a Xavier-Georgetown game that's going to, if Xavier loses, is going to put Xavier on the wrong side of the bubble, right? So it is a race to get to 13 wins total. And then
13 games.
13 games, yeah. 13 games total for each team.
Right.
And once you're there, it's all about optimizing the resume, right? And for teams that have an optimized resume, there's going to be much less incentive for them to make games. And if you, the other point I would make here is if you look at Marquette's remaining schedule, let's just out of nowhere, right? There's 10 games left. Let's say three of those games end up being quote unquote postponed because of COVID for whatever reason, right? The difference in the remaining schedule, if the three games canceled are Xavier, Connecticut, and Creighton, is totally different than if the three games canceled are Butler, St. John's, and DePaul, right? Like the aggregate of what Marquette faces, what its opportunities are for building an NCAA tournament resume. So Marquette has, you know, it seems like I'm making like the same points over and over again, but it is absolutely critical that every game that gets played, Marquette has to win those games because no other games are promised beyond that. And any lost game just hurts Marquette's already shaky tournament situation, right? Like if Marquette loses to DePaul, just based on the way that the schedule shakes out and the possibility, the likelihood of teams falling out, that DePaul loss is probably a tournament bid killer, right? It's almost like I'm talking myself into DePaul as a must-win game, but I kind of think that's where we're at.
Yeah, that, you know, that it's almost like, I know the math doesn't really work that way, but it's like that game is a percentage of your overall resume. If you play 30 games and one of them is a loss to DePaul, there's a lot of resume to make up for that.
Yeah.
But if you only play 15 games and one of them is a loss to DePaul, that's kind of a glaring wart, and there's not a whole lot else to make up for that. So
exactly.
That's kind of where you're going with it. So, but yeah, so as it is, Marquette has 14 games played. DePaul this week would be 15. So they have enough games played to be eligible. The question is, do they have enough wins that they would be selected?
Right.
If you look at bracket matrix right now, the answer to that appears to be no, but there are opportunities to make that up. You just got to hope these games get played.
Right.
Because if they don't get played, you're kind of on the outside looking in. So, yeah, it's probably a bit of an exaggeration to say every game's a must win, but it does kind of feel like that just because no opportunity to make up for warts on your resume is going to be promised to you. So
right. Well, and I mean, the other piece of it is, like, if you look at it from a KenPom ranking, right, all of Marquette's losses are KenPom top 50 or lower, right? So, like, whenever the team sheets come out and they look at the aggregate of the rating systems and stuff like that, whether it's a quad one, quad two, quad three, quad four loss and win, right? Marquette's in fine shape on the quads three and four, right? A home loss to DePaul would be a quad three loss, which would show up, which would be really amplified, right? So DePaul, Providence, and Butler would all be at least two quad two, if not quad three losses. That's what Marquette has to guard against, right? Marquette has to win these games, if nothing else, is to keep that significant blemish off the record. They've got a couple of good, you know, wins, right? They've got Creighton and they've got Wisconsin, and everything else is probably tolerable from a loss standpoint. But if you start losing those quad two, quad threes, that's an anchor you can never get rid of.
Right, and you may not get the opportunities to make it up because, if you, like I said, you DePaul, you got to win. Butler, you got to win because they're borderline. They're getting close to 100 in KenPom. But say, like, you lose to Providence, you know, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world on its own. But if you don't get an opportunity to play, say, Creighton or Seton Hall or
yep.
Connecticut later and kind of really make it up, that Providence loss could bring you down. That's why there's maybe a little more pressure on getting that win against Providence next week, which is it's scheduled for Wednesday the 27th. So
yeah, exactly.
Certainly, this team has some work to do. The bottom line is, and the question is, how much opportunities are they going to get that work in? And got to start on Saturday with DePaul. I think they will get it done. It is a home game. DePaul, again, they've only played six games this year. It's been a really rough go for DePaul. Their two wins are Western Illinois, and they were able to get in a game against Valpo this past weekend. Other than that, they haven't won a game in the Big East. Their games in the Big East, I mean, they haven't been particularly close. They went to overtime against Providence. They hung around and lost to by 7 to Connecticut. But their KenPom numbers aren't great. They're really a poor offensive team. Don't shoot the ball well. Turn it over a ton.
They turn it off. Turn it over more than Marquette does.
But Marquette doesn't force turnovers, so may not really work against DePaul too badly. DePaul actually shoots it surprisingly well from three. That's one thing DePaul does do pretty. So that's maybe one thing to be aware of, because as paint touches is documented very well, Marquette's one of its big weaknesses defensively this year is unguarded three pointers. So if you're playing a team that is shooting close to 40% from three, to call it 37.8 from three, you give them a lot of wide open looks, that could be problematic. So maybe that's the one thing I would be nervous about playing this DePaul team, but overall, this is a game Marquette should win. Marquette's going to be favored. I think KenPom has Marquette as an 8-point favorite this week, so I think they'll get it done. They just continue to chip away at that resume. You're not going to get all the way back on the good side of the bubble this week, but you can't take 10 steps without taking that first one. So I think they'll take that first step this week and get DePaul.
Yeah, oddly enough, I think it's going to be an ugly game, and I think it'll probably
– It always is with DePaul. Like, isn't it? Like always is.
Yeah, and I think – I mean, Marquette's going to go down like double digits in the first half of this game. I can just feel it in my bones, right? Like DePaul's going to light off, like go 4 for 5 from three in the first 15 minutes of the game, and you know, Marquette will commit a couple of silly fouls or something like that. So I'm expecting a game like that where it's real ugly and you know, Marquette gets down, double digits at some point. I do think Marquette gets the win. I think just from a talent perspective and a playing experience and just overall gravitas, if you will,
that can play in your favor, and so that's something Marquette is going to be missing in this game. Is even though Wisconsin fans always do find their way into Marquette's arena, whether it was the Bradley Center or now the Fiserv Forum, there were always going to be Wisconsin fans in there. But at least Marquette could outnumber them and be a little louder on the calls they want than the Wisconsin fans would. So that's something Marquette is going to be missing out on, is the thousands of extra fans in the arena riding the officials and trying to get them on their side and trying to get those two or three extra calls that go the home team's way that maybe could be the difference in a close game. And it could be the difference in a critical moment late in the game, whether they're calling, whatever, a key block charge call, or get a couple extra free throws, something like that. It's pretty much all on the coaching staff riding the officials and try to get the calls going in their favor. But yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, because like when you're playing at the Kohl Center and the crowd erupts every time Wisconsin draws a charge, well, that can kind of snowball on you and kind of get out of hand. Fortunately, we won't be dealing with that. So
when
that,
we actually,
I mean, that's
do
good.
Them.
But this game is in our arena, so you would hope we're getting those calls, but we're not going to have the fans helping us get those calls this year.
I'm going to take the sage advice of a boss I once had who said, get comfortable with the uncomfortable. That's what Marquette is this season. They're uncomfortable. Let's just get comfortable with it.